There is a continual cycle of skeletal tissue breaking down and rebuilding new tissue in its place. When this cycle is altered, either by aging and or certain medical conditions, bone loss can result and lead to a disease known as osteoporosis. According to the National Osteoporosis Foundation, 54 million Americans have osteoporosis and low bone mass. Approximately 1 in 2 women and up to 1 in 4 men age 50 and older will break a bone due to osteoporosis. Even if measures are taken to avoid breaking a bone, osteoporosis can limit mobility and overall quality of life. Because optimal bone production peaks in our mid to late 20s, measures to prevent osteoporosis should start as soon as in our 30s. Other factors, besides age, can lead to additional bone loss over time. Common medications, such as aluminum-containing antacids, certain types of heartburn drugs known as proton pump inhibitors, and thyroid medications are just a few that may contribute to bone loss. It's important to visit with your healthcare provider to go over all medications you may be taking, including all prescription, over-the-counter, and herbal supplements, which may need to be modified or changed to reduce your risks associated with osteoporosis. The good news is that there are things we can do to slow down bone loss and minimize the risks for injury associated with osteoporosis. The two major focus areas are through diet and exercise. The concept of food being our best medicines holds truth and is no different when it comes to boosting our skeletal system. Powerhouse foods that are rich in vitamins and minerals are essential to optimize the bone's ability to absorb, form, and maintain stronger tissue. Green leafy vegetables are a great start, which contain higher concentrations of calcium and vitamin K. Other foods include fatty fishes, such as salmon, which can have as high as 180 milligrams of calcium per serving. Almond butter, also rich in calcium, but also potassium and protein as well. Citrus beverages, such as orange juice, not only contain calcium, but are amped up with vitamin C, another bone loss preventer. Don't stop with diet alone. Exercise, particularly strength and weight-bearing training, plays a pivotal role in maintaining bone density and strength. If there is any one thing that is the fountain of youth, strength and weight-bearing exercises are the closest thing to it. Just like your muscles, bones get stronger when you work them out. Exercises that work against gravity when you move prompt the body to make more bone. The good news is you don't have to be Mr. or Ms. Olympia to achieve beneficial results. Weight-bearing exercise can include taking the stairs, walking, dancing, water aerobics, and even yoga. Strength training encompasses activities such as weightlifting, which doesn't always have to be in a gym, using elastic resistance bands, and or doing moves that utilize your own body weight, such as push-ups, squats, dips, and pull-ups. Lastly, take advantage of the time you do spend at appointments with your healthcare provider. Ask them if a bone density test may be needed to get a better understanding of what the current state of your bones might be in. This can also open up a conversation on what may be the best plan for you to ward off osteoporosis, prevent injury, improve mobility, and thus quality of life. Take these measures today to ensure osteoporosis doesn't sneak up on you. Master Gardeners, Should You Use Soil Solarization? By Debbie Rowland, Master Gardener. It's only June, and I've already pulled what seems like a million weeds out of flower beds, the garden, and even the cracks in my sidewalks and driveway. While cruising the internet for a solution, I ran across an article about soil solarization on https://aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu. Click on the vegetable tab to get more details on the study used in this article. Solarization is an environmentally friendly method of using the sun's power to control weeds and pests. Cover the ground with a transparent plastic, and the sun will heat the soil to temperatures that kill bacteria, fungi, insects, nematodes, mites, weeds, and weed seeds. Start with weed-free soil, plenty of water, and enough plastic to completely cover the weed-free area you will need. Clear the area of plants and debris, water the soil deeply, cover the area with clear plastic, such as 1-4 mil painter's plastic. Don't use white or black plastic. They don't allow enough heat to get to the soil. Bury the plastic edges in the soil to trap the heat. Leave the plastic in place for at least 4 weeks in the hottest part of the summer. This will give you time to plant your fall garden. Remove the plastic. Spread compost and till the soil. Don't skip this step, since solarization kills all organisms, even the beneficial ones. The compost will replace the beneficial organisms. Your garden is ready for planting. Tips: solarization works best when there are no air pockets between the plastic and the ground. Be sure there are no holes or tears in the plastic. Digging a shallow trench around the edges may help. Place the edges of the plastic in the trench and cover with soil. With the West Texas winds, it may also be helpful to place a few rocks or bricks on the plastic. Gardeners can use solarization to significantly reduce weeds long and short term. Solarization is an environmentally friendly method of using the sun's power to control weeds and pests. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa, or at 686-4700 in Midland, or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. We are an educational service organization of volunteers trained by Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. Visit westtexasgardening.org. Gardening, Texas Master Gardeners. Invasive weed deadly to horses. Yellow star thistle, Centaurea solstitialis, is native to Eurasia, and it is classified by the USDA as a noxious and invasive weed in many western states. It is common in open areas on roadsides, rangeland, wildlands, hay fields, as well as pastures. It forms dense infestations and rapidly depletes soil moisture, preventing the establishment of other species. It is poisonous to horses, causing a nervous disorder called chewing disease, which is fatal once symptoms develop. Horses are the only animal known to be affected in this manner and should not be allowed to graze on yellow star thistle. Yellow star thistle produces thistle-like yellow flowers with sharp spines surrounding the base. Yellow star thistle grows to heights varying from 6 inches to 5 feet. After germinating, the plant initially allocates most of its resources to root growth. By late spring, roots can extend over 3 feet into the soil profile, while the portion above ground is a relatively small basal rosette. This gives yellow star thistle a competitive advantage against shallow-rooted annual species during the drier summer months when moisture availability is limited near the soil surface. This explains why yellow star thistle survives well into the summer, long after other annual species have dried up, and why it can regrow after top removal from mowing or grazing. Both post-emergent and pre-emergent herbicides are available to control yellow star thistle along roadsides, rights of way, and non-crop areas. Most herbicides registered for use in rangeland and pastures are only active post-emergence. Clopyrrolid, however, has both pre-emergence and post-emergence activity on yellow star thistle. If you experience issues with yellow star thistle, it is recommended to dig out the taproot. If the weed is not taken out at the source, it will continue to grow back season after season. This spiny weed is highly competitive, as well as highly painful if you encounter it. Keep an eye out for this noxious weed. Gardening. Jeanette Castanone. Castanone is a horticulturist with Texas AgriLife Extension Service. She can be reached at 686-4700 or by email at Jeanette, that's J-E-A-N-E-T-T-E, .Castanone, C-A-S-T-A-N-O-N, at ag.tamu.edu. Pets of the Week. Jazz, a three-month-old female kitten, needs to be adopted into a good home. Jazz looks to be a little black-and-white kitten, very cute. To adopt Jazz or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane. Call 381-5503. Visit www.odessahumanesociety.org or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $50. Jake, a three-year-old male bulldog mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. Jake is all white, looks like, except for a few little black spots on his ears. His ears are not standing up, they're flopped over. And he's a beautiful-looking dog. To adopt Jake or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane, or call 381-5503, visit www.odessahumanesociety.org, or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa. Again, the Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $50. Photos, courtesy of Odessa Humane Society.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading an article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram that was published Saturday, June 6th. Big Bend area slowly coming back to life after COVID. Many popular spots are still closed, but tourists willing to make the drive. By John McCormick, San Antonio Express News. Terlingua. With the coronavirus still lurking almost everywhere, the big family wedding in Ireland and the honeymoon to Italy didn't stand a chance. So last week, Grant and Kelly Heatley of Austin headed west for a more modest getaway that included kayaking on the Rio Grande. The Big Bend is our happy place, so it's a close second to Italy, said Kelly, 33, as she waited at the far-flung outdoor center in Study Butte. We just wanted to get the heck out of Dodge. There's just so much we can take of each other in a 1,400-square-foot home. 2 months after elected officials in Brewster, Presidio, and Jeff Davis counties took the precaution of closing all area hotels, and lodgings, effectively snuffing out the area's lifeblood of tourism, the Big Bend is slowly coming back to life. While state parks are again receiving visitors, the Big Bend National Park, which last year drew close to 500,000 people, had a phased reopening beginning Monday. Other popular attractions that remain inaccessible include the Museum of the Big Bend in Alpine, the McDonald Observatory near Fort Davis, and the famous art galleries in Marfa. I think some people are still scared to visit. We are not on the way to anything. You have to want to come here and see us. And if the national park is not open, that's our main draw, said Kara Gerbert of the Brewster County Tourism Council. As the pandemic swept across the world and through most of Texas this spring, the Big Bend was one of the safest places to be in the state. Until last week, when a second positive result turned up in Presidio County, only one case had been detected in the three counties. Together, they cover an area almost as large as Maryland, but count fewer than 20,000 residents. Although controversial to the point of triggering a lawsuit, the decision by public officials to abruptly close the region to outsiders likely played a part in keeping the coronavirus at bay. Today, the region is reopening. In South Brewster County, there were signs last week that a recovery is underway. At the Lajitas Golf Resort, on an emerald course shimmering in the Chihuahuan Desert, the Duffers and Ringers were teeing off each morning last week. In the Terlingua Ghost Town, live music was heard at the Starlight Theater for the first time in 2 months. Like old times, hungry diners waited outside for a table, albeit one strategically spaced to comply with Governor Greg Abbott's 50% occupancy directive. Inside the Old Rock Movie Theater, tourists enjoyed novelty dishes such as chicken-fried antelope and tequila-marinated quail, while dining beneath dangling cow skulls. Among those waiting on a rock porch were Matt and Shelley Rutherford of Austin, with their two kids, Olivia, 7, and Beau, 3, playing with a toy pop gun. School was closed, daycare was closed, and we were all home together, Shelley said. I said, we're going to drive west, and here we are. I always wanted to see Terlingua. For Bill Ivey, 64, owner of much of the ghost town, including the Starlight, the Memorial Day weekend brought a welcome change. It was surprisingly busy, the first business we've seen since the shutdown, he said. But if you look at my hotel bookings, it's almost nothing. Compared to last year, it's down 60-70%. Hiding out. In Brewster County, where county commissioners had imposed a 14-day quarantine on outsiders, deputies kept a sharp eye out for big city folks trying to dodge the law. We'd have people from Austin and San Antonio sneaking out here and going on private property, hiding out and camping, Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson said. We didn't write any tickets associated with the COVID. It was all associated with trespassing. The sheriff said things got pretty lean during the shutdown for some out-of-work residents in Study Butte and Terlingua. We had to deliver food to some of our citizens down south. People were starting to get hungry, he said. Two large cross-border food deliveries have already been made to residents of Boquillas, Mexico, which sits just across from the national park. The tiny town depends on park tourists, but with the crossing now closed, times there are hard. Local outfitter Mike Davidson is planning a third delivery in mid-June. Even now, with tourists trickling in and some people going back to work, many Big Bend residents are wary of a deadly virus that they know best from watching cable TV. We're completely open, but I think as a community, we're still worried, said Larry Francell, the emergency management coordinator for Jeff Davis County, home to the McDonald Observatory and the Chihuahuan Desert Nature Center. Even though we've had no positive cases, with people coming here from far and wide, it doesn't mean we won't get cases. The worrisome time is right now, he said. Noting the area's modest health safety net, Mimi Webb Miller, 71, who operates three small businesses in the ghost town, fears the danger is far from over. I'm worried about being inundated in this community. It could not be contained, she fretted last week in her hillside rock house. If someone got sick in my motel, I don't know how I could ever forgive myself. Marfa still closed. In Marfa, an old cow town that over the last couple of decades became a mecca for sophisticated culture tourists and a darling of the New York Times, almost all of the galleries, museums, and artsy shops are still closed. Some of the people meandering around the quiet downtown, where they reopened, most of the restaurants are still closed or are in takeout mode. The town's crown jewel is the 90-year-old Hotel Paisano, which in 1955 hosted Elizabeth Taylor, James Dean, and Rock Hudson during the making of the movie classic Giant. Here, guests are asked to wear masks when dealing with masked hotel employees. You have to respect people's feelings on this. Last week, we had some friends in from California. They were just as nervous as could be with anyone within 6 feet of them, hotel owner Joe Duncan said. We just reopened May 1st. Right now, occupancy is running around 20%. It's going to take a long time. Jose Pratt, manager of the Thunderbird Hotel, is getting a new type of guest, out-of-town lovebirds who come to get married after being bumped from their original venue. Their weddings were canceled, so they decided to come to Marfa and get married in the desert with a really small party, he said. The biggest problem for tourists, said David Beeb, a justice of the peace and restaurant owner, is that Marfa's best-known attractions are closed. There is not much to do out here. You come to see what you've read about. And foremost in Marfa, it's the art foundations, the Chinati and Judd. But they are not open, he said. Even the observation dome atop the majestic peach-hued county courthouse, a popular lookout spot, is closed to visitors. From his third-floor office in the courthouse, Beeb can look straight down Highland Avenue, the city's business district. I can see about 10 cars parked along the street. 2 weeks ago, there were zero, and that's the first time I can remember that since I moved here in 2007, he said. Minerva Lopez, the director of the Marfa Visitor Center, which remains closed to visitors, said she regularly deflects callers who want to visit. They are trying to get away from there, and we have the wide open spaces, she said. I suggest they take a drive down the River Road or through the Davis Mountains. A ghost town again. And even though the region's hotels are open again, the hard feelings over their abrupt shutdown continue to simmer. A lawsuit filed by J.P. Bryan, owner of the Gage Hotel in Marathon, against Brewster County Judge Eleazar Cano over the closures is pending in federal court. In the suit, Brian claims that there was no legal or public safety basis for Cano's March 23rd shutdown order and that it violated his constitutional rights. Other business owners also protested loudly without going to court. Being shut down was hideous and it was extremely divisive, said Linda Walker, owner of two riding stables in South Brewster. Being a liberal all my life, I find myself oddly on the other side of this, more than I expected. Suddenly, right after the chaos of spring break, the tourists disappeared and everything just stopped. For those who rely on a weekly paycheck, it was a time of isolation and hardship. Nita Brashnir, 90, a longtime Terlingua resident, doubts the given justification for the whole ordeal. It was painful as hell. It was not fun for anyone, said Brashear, who suspects it was all a political thing. there is nothing to it. More people die of cancer. And they'd better not put coronavirus on my death certificate. They can put pure orneriness. For some other old-timers, the six-week pause evoked fond memories of the primitive communal life they had decades ago, before the ghost town was discovered by tourists. One old river guide, who arrived in Terlingua in the 1990s, explained those sentiments. Most people here are retirees or people who get mailbox money, and most of us were happy to get a break, the guide said. It was the old ghost town, as quiet as pre-millennium. No tourists or services, no lights at night, no highway growl from 170 in the morning. Only us.
Thank you for joining us for this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Far West Texas News, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 8.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 67 and partly cloudy. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 60s. Then, tomorrow, sunny with a high in the mid-90s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Coronavirus updates, weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 7 a.m.
Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading from the Big Bend Sentinel. Presidio youth take to streets to support Black Lives Matter movement. June 10th, 2020, by Beck Andrew Salgado, read by Melanie. Presidio. Passionate chants permeated the Presidio streets Tuesday evening as emphatic protesters marched up and down O'Reilly Street while clinging to cardboard signs that read, "Fight the power, Black Lives Matter, and matter is the minimum." The group of 14 young protesters, who were escorted by five Presidio police trucks that were present for the protesters' safety, congregated at the Presidio High School track before proceeding to march down to the Santa Teresa Church. Along the way, chants of "No Justice, No Peace" and "Black Lives Matter" were repeated as protesters walked with their fists up in the air. After seeing the wave of protests that have materialized in each and every state across the country, Presidio High Class of 2019 graduate Leilani Chavez decided something needed to be done in Presidio. Chavez, who lives in Las Vegas now, expressed that seeing everything that was going on and not being able to be home while it started really took a toll on her. And so she decided to come home and organize a protest of her own in Presidio. To urge people to join her in the streets of Presidio, Chavez took to Facebook and Twitter with an impassioned post that spotlighted the injustices behind the death of George Floyd. The post continued saying, "I want to be able to show the world that small towns like mine are standing with them, showing our support." The post was retweeted and shared across social media to bring awareness. Chavez, who was pleasantly surprised by the turnout, said that while the Black Lives Matter protests are more prominent in bigger cities, she felt they still needed to be represented in smaller ones too, because we all want to be one. Representing the Black Lives Matter movement was important to the Presidio resident, Jalen Goldston, who said, "Seeing all these people and reading all these stories about what's happening across the country is hurtful. For her, knowing that it could happen to me anytime is more than enough to encourage her to take to the streets to advocate for change."
Goldston stated, "I'm like one of two, maybe three black people in this town." And so she felt it was crucial for her to represent the movement where she lived.